I'm Amanda McNulty with Clemson Extension and Making It Grow, and this is Making It Grow Extra. Today, my guest is Davis Sanders from South Pleasantburg Nursery up in Greenville. Davis, you are one of the most knowledgeable people about just plants, you know, the landscape plants and woody plants, herbaceous perennials, and even annuals. But I think beyond most people who have that knowledge and skill set, you're very interested in what makes plants grow well. And perhaps that's because you also work some as a landscape installer. You have your own side business. How did you garner all this knowledge? And did you just get curious about how to make your plants do better when you put them in somebody else's yard?
Well, thanks for having me, Amanda, and I appreciate the question. My background in horticulture actually comes almost exclusively from on-the-job training. I was I like to tell people that I'm blessed with a liberal arts education and cursed with a good memory. A lot of times that liberal arts background will pique someone's curiosity. And after school, I had originally intended to teach, but then I decided that teaching wasn't for me, and I went into retail. I was fortunate enough to have an employer who saw the benefit of having a well-stocked garden center in a retail setting, and that just piqued my interest in plants. I did major in biology in college.
So you did have a science background.
Yes, I did. And Dr. Fred James, the late Dr. James at Presbyterian College, was quite a mentor and a role model for me. The man's fascination with all things living was absolutely contagious. And the fact that he piqued so much of my interest in the plant and the invertebrate world just sort of gave me a natural tool to help absorb some of this information that I like to share now.
Well, and so many people just think about the visible space when we're dealing with plants, but the real, I mean, of course, we've got to have the sunshine, which for photosynthesis, but there is an incredible world under the soil surface that is incredibly important for plant growth. And I think that's what you wanted to touch on a little bit today.
Yes, it's I liken it to the ocean. You see this vast expanse of water, and just beneath the surface is a teeming ecosystem that starts with single-celled organisms and goes all the way up to the great white shark and everything in between. And the soil and the terrain in an area is no different. You may only see turf grass or, in a lot of cases, weeds on the surface, but once you get just underneath the surface, you find out what a huge environment there is just beneath our feet.
Well, we all know that plants need to get water from the soil, and then the roots get oxygen for the respiration cycle through the ambient movement of air filling in pore spaces, and nutrients, which we usually think of as coming from fertilizers, but there's a lot more that goes on down there. And of course, for a long time, we didn't even have fertilizers to put out, and plants were growing just marvelously during the dinosaur age and ever since. So what's down there, Davis, and what are some of the interactions we can talk about today?
Well, it starts with the just the transport of nutrients into the plant itself when the plant's not manufacturing its own. And a lot of the things that are in the soil that are invisible to the naked eye, things like mycorrhizal fungi and nitrifying bacteria, a lot of the single-celled organisms that are capable of transporting sugars and other nutrient material to the plants. We're learning more and more that these microorganisms and this microenvironment down there has every bit as much of an impact on the plant's growth and overall vigor as the nutrients that we add, either mechanically or organically.
And one of the things that seems to encourage that is organic matter, because organic matter is a source of nutrients, and these, even if they're single-celled organisms, they have nutritional needs, don't they? And
yes,
they have to get those nutrients from someplace.
Yes, they do. And it's been proven that that a lot of these organisms actually work on almost a barter system. It's almost a unicellular symbiotic relationship. The microorganisms have something that the plants can use. The plants manufacture something that the organisms can use, so they swap.
And I've been fortunate, Davis, to a couple of years, the Richland County NRCS, Natural Resources Conservation Service, part of the USDA, has put on a field day at a farm in Eastover. And Buzz Clute is a professor at the University of South Carolina, and he comes and talks about that. And sometimes they show us these electron microscope slides and pictures. And they have shown us, Davis, these single-cell organisms actually getting a nutrient like a phosphorus molecule and carrying it to the plant root in exchange for some of the substances the plant root gives off, you know, the sugars and things that provide energy for those organisms. I mean, it really is like being at a bazaar in, you know, in the Far East in some ways, I think.
Yes, when you've got an equal exchange between two organisms, it's the almost the ultimate in cooperation, and the fact that that these organisms exist in the first place is just an incredible, incredibly fascinating facet of this business that we're in. The mycorrhizal fungi that grow in the soil, they tend to
talk a little bit about that and yes. about the extent that they can the space they can occupy.
Oh yes, the mycorrhizae are there's still debate on whether they're animals, plants, whether the fungi and the bacteria in the soil are actually belong in a separate kingdom, not just plants and animals, mm-hmm. but bacteria and fungi also. Sometimes are grouped into their own kingdom or even two subkingdoms, but the mycorrhizae, the mycelia, the growing bodies that these organisms produce can spread for miles or even acres and acres. There's a evidence that the world's largest organism is a slime mold that covers most of the eastern United States. That is genetically identical in Pennsylvania to the same organism that's growing in the North Georgia mountains.
Well, people, when they get slime mold in their wonderful turf grass, they get upset, and it's wonderful to be able to say there's no danger in a slime mold, it'll go away, because they could be pretty nasty looking.
Well, and it's like mushrooms growing in a turf grass area. Uh-huh. It's just a sign that there is organic matter in the soil, and if that organic matter is there, it's providing nutrients to some of the other organisms that help our plants grow.
Well, because fungi can break down certain compounds that smaller organisms can't. Wood, for instance, which is why sometimes you get those fairy rings if you have, mm-hmm. buried wood or dead roots in the soil, because a fungus can break down the compounds found in wood, whereas some of the bacteria and other things can't. We know that we talk about those little hair roots and how important they are. People get all upset about the big roots, but those little fine hair roots, they're the real absorbers. And you said that this mycorrhizal fungi can act like an extension of the absorbing root system, I believe.
Exactly. The mycorrhizae will grow on the plant's roots, and in effect, it will triple the surface area of the root. It becomes an integral part of the biosphere that the root is growing in, to the extent that that it actually becomes a part of the root almost. If it triples the surface area of the root, that means that it's capable of taking in three times as much water. And of course, since all the nutrients that the plant doesn't manufacture for itself are present in the soil, but they have to have a mode of transportation into the plant, mm-hmm. and that's through water. The more water the plant can take in, the more nutrients it can take in.
Plus just the fact that the plants need water for just their for turgor, for moving things around within the plant, for keeping their leaves expanded, overcoming the desiccation of wind, and all those things. So we know that, and I think all of us in South Carolina, when we have a long, dry spell, realize that our plants just have to have extra water sometime. And so what you're saying is that the extent that this mycorrhizal fungi can extend in the soil can go so much farther than the plant root and can help bring water in from a much help just increase the area that the plant can take water from.
And that that also goes hand in hand with some of the studies that have actually shown that plants are capable of communicating. And there's a school of thought out there that believes that the mycorrhizae are responsible for the plants transmitting information to one another.
Because it's like they're all connected in this matrix that is kind of serving as a communication system between them.
And it's something that I don't think we'll ever be able to fully understand.
It's a pretty pretty wild concept, isn't it?
Yeah, some people use the word miracle.
We have a tendency now, and there's been a lot of work done, Buzz Kloot and his group particularly, to encourage some of our larger farmers to go towards a no-till system because and I'm sure you've seen it, you go into a field that's constantly tilled and you can't even find an earthworm.
That's right. The biosystem that's just under the surface is just like a city or a society. It takes years to develop and evolve, and a little bit of mechanical damage can set back that evolution for days, weeks, months, even years. Anytime you till an area, these mycelia that are in the ground get broken, the strands get broken, and it takes them a long time to heal themselves and start regenerating. Whereas with a no-till farm, the key ingredients that are responsible for allowing the plant to take in the nutrients are not disturbed, so they continue to multiply without any type of setback.
And so, as you said, because this connectivity extends the surface area, basically, of the plant roots and gives it a larger area to mine for nutrients, the farmers who practice this new way of farming find that they can generally reduce their fertilizers and also that their water need is reduced.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons why a lot of the responsible landscapers and even retailers in the business nowadays are recommending mycorrhizal fertilizers, organic fertilizers that have a mycorrhizal supplement, because it's in the long run, it's going to cut down on water consumption. It's going to cut down on maintenance for the homeowner or for the farmer. If it cuts down on water consumption, that means that our water tables are going to remain more stable. And, water is, they don't call it the water of life for nothing.
I think this has been a wonderful thing for our listeners to learn about today. I hope that it will give them a bigger view of the gardening world and the farming world. And I want to thank you for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me, man. It's always a pleasure.